Ruth chapter 3. And beginning to read it, verse 1. One day Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, "No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled." Now let's come again before our... Now sometimes when it comes to what we know, or when it comes to the area of our competence, we think that we don't need to pray about that. We think we know perhaps how to handle people, so we don't pray about an upcoming encounter or conversation. Perhaps we're going to engage in some polemics and we know the argument well, so we feel that we don't really need to pray. Do you remember the story in the Gospels where Jesus had been teaching all day and then he said to his fishermen disciples, "Come, let us go into the boat and go over to the other side of the lake." And what does Mark say? He says, "Then they took him." Jesus' idea, "Let us go," but then they took him. Why did they take him? Because they were the fishermen, weren't they? So Jesus is not needed. He goes to the back of the boat, falls asleep, and then the storm comes, and all of a sudden they look for Jesus. "Do you not care that we're going to drown?" Even in the area of where we think we're competent, where we think we're skilled, we should constantly look towards the Lord. Naturally, taking over, doing things without reference to God, walking in our own strength. Something like that is happening to Naomi in this chapter. We see Naomi reverting back to her old ways. Now, I continue with the idea that Naomi is the main character of the book. And now we see in this third chapter, which is the third act of this real life drama, which is being told in an immaculate way by the narrator. Now, out of all the women in the Bible, Naomi is my all-time favorite. Everything that she does is perfectly understandable. yet it's not acceptable. Understandable, everything that she does, we in a way can identify with her humanity, with all the flaws that seem to be so obvious to us. This biography is far superior to any biography that you will read outside the Bible. Many biographies that you read create plastic characters, people who are not real. But Naomi, we see her with her moods, with her foolishness, with her weakness, with her faith, with her trust in God, her moments of understanding to the providence of God, having an idea of what God might be doing, how God might begin to bless. There's real character here that lives in this drama as God works in her life. And as God works in her life, the drama that He works in her life, so He works that drama in our lives as well. We're given a window here into the life of Naomi so that we can see how God works with her, so that we will understand, well, everything in my life seems very ordinary. It seemed very ordinary to Naomi, but yet God was doing a marvelous thing. God was working. She has what might be described as a topsy-turvy walk with God. And isn't that the case with us? We learn of the goodness and the kindness of God, and yet we get it wrong again. We make mistakes. But if God is gracious like this with Naomi, perhaps God will be gracious with me too. He'll hold me when I don't want to be held. He'll come to me with a message of comfort when I don't want to listen. God is gracious. Remember that we are enjoying here the benefit of seeing both sides, understanding Naomi's life as she lives it with all the uncertainty, everything that is unclear, but then we see the certainty from God's angle of exactly what God is doing. God is lining up the people at the right time in the right place to accomplish His will. And all the time, Naomi, Boaz, and Ruth are not fully aware of what it is that God is actually doing. The tremendous comfort that we can draw from this third act in the book of Ruth is that while we can see that Naomi's advice is very risky advice and Ruth's behavior is very questionable, we learn even in the blunders and in the mistakes and the foolishness that God is gracious and merciful, and He continues to bless these people even when they are not behaving very wisely. You see, Naomi can't see the events in the story the way that we can. She's working issues out in a kind of a confusion of not being able to see the whole picture. But we can see the whole picture because God has given us this record. That's the way life is for the majority of our time. You know, some people tell me, well, the Lord told me to do this, the Lord told me to do that, and I know exactly what God's doing in my life this week. Most of the time we don't have a clue what God is doing in our lives. The thing that we are meant to learn is that God is doing. Maybe not exactly what He's doing, but to know that He is doing and learn to trust Him. I want to learn of these weaknesses in Naomi's life. I want to note the foolish things that she does. And even when she's doing foolish things for the right reason, to see the grace of God shining through. That allows us in the weakness of our own humanity to be able to identify with Naomi and to bow our heads in shame at the waywardness of our own hearts, but not to be overwhelmed, to be encouraged that God is still pleased to use people like you and me. Naomi is a very ordinary woman, anxious to get through life, uncertain about what way things will go at times, struggling with the decisions that she's had to make. She's prepared to cut a few corners in order to get the job done. Give us just a little bit of experience of a thing, and then we can go on and try and do it without any reference to God at all. Put us into something new, and then we're talking to God. But as soon as we finish the apprenticeship, we can go on without God. Sure, it is right for us to gain confidence from our experience, but don't allow that sense of confidence to cause you to move on without reference to the Holy God. Notice how the chapter is tied together in a literary unit. It opens with Naomi's clever, daring morning plan. It then proceeds with the ensuing evening and the midnight rendezvous between Boaz and Ruth on the threshing floor, to end with Ruth's dawn report back to Naomi as she asks, "How did it go, my daughter?" The events of chapter 2 were so unplanned by people. You remember what it says? She happened to find herself in a field belonging to Boaz. And then it so happened that Boaz came along. You could see the hand of God superintending what was going on. Chapter 2 was controlled and regulated and moved along by God. But now in chapter 3, Naomi seems to be interfering, pushing things along, giving God a little help in whatever it is that God is attempting to do. Let's begin with Act 3, if you like, Scene 1, the daring morning plan, the threshing floor plan. Here is this lady, Naomi, and she's used to taking things into her own hands. Remember when there was famine in the land some years ago? She took things into her own hand and she went to Moab. The right thing for her to do and her family to do was to look into the Word of God to see, when there's no bread in the house of bread, what does that mean? It means that God is punishing you. And what are you meant to do as a result of that? You're meant to return. You're meant to repent. And you can see that word return 11 or 12 times in chapter 1. Return, return, return. She should never have left in the first place. She had left in her heart, and then she left physically. But she should have stayed where she was and repented of her sin, and then God would have blessed. Don't leave the house of bread. Don't leave the place where God has promised to bless. But not content to wait on God's time and on God's deliverance, off she goes. Now, what part Elimelech played in this, we don't know. We're not told. All we see is that the focus falls on Naomi. And we're told that she went out full, and the Lord has brought her back empty. Brought out full of her own ideas, depending upon her own resources. And now the Lord has brought her back helpless, empty. The big picture here is that this woman who has come back empty is going to experience the fullness of the Lord's blessing in her life. Is there anything that you can see in Naomi that merits this kind of blessing? There's not. Is there anything that you can see in yourself that merits the Lord's blessing? And the answer is, there's not. We do not deserve it, but God is gracious and merciful. This time, Naomi is not going to take it into her head to run away, but she now has an idea about what God is doing in her life, and she intervenes to lend a helping hand to push things along at a greater speed by giving this rather risky advice to her daughter-in-law. Her objective is clearly stated in verse 1. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try? Look at how good I've been over this last 10 years at organizing things. Should I not try to find a home for you?" There's no doubt about it that Naomi is taking things into her own hands. And this is in marked contrast to chapter 2. There we see God providentially bringing Boaz and Ruth together. But now Naomi puts her clever plan into action to try and secure a husband and a home for Ruth, and of course for herself. After all, it's getting close to the end of the wheat harvest, and little progress has been made on the romance front. So Naomi feels that she needs some positive action on her part in order to try and jumpstart things. You know, Boaz, he's an older man. He's been a bachelor for all these years. Maybe he needs a little bit of a push to get him going, addressing Ruth as my daughter. That could be a term of endearment, but it also could be an attempt to establish an unequal power relationship. Perhaps now we understand why Naomi advised at the end of chapter 2 for Ruth to stay with the young woman. Was it really for Ruth's safety, or did Naomi have in mind young women as opposed to young men, because the older man Boaz was Naomi's intended catch for Ruth? And of course, getting Boaz would also mean redemption for her, her home and her land. Boaz in chapter 3:19 remarks that Ruth had not run after the younger men. Now Naomi puts this plan, this dangerous and deceptive plan, into action. Look at the advice. Bathe yourself, put on some perfume, your best clothes. Now let's try and modernize that to bring it into the 21st century. Go and take a shower, put on some of that Chanel number 5. That is a perfume, isn't it? Yeah, he doesn't know. And wear that little black dress that you have. A series of 4 verbs takes us through a sequence. Wash, anoint, put on, go down. A series of symbolic actions that moves from Ruth's uncovered body while washing to her anointed body, to her covered body when dressed. Tonight, go down to the barn where Boaz will be threshing barley. Wait until he's had his food and his wine. And Ruth is to not to make herself known, but she is to know where Boaz lies down. The plan depends on Ruth having more knowledge than Boaz. And Boaz is both literally and figuratively in the dark. Now this passage is laced with innuendo and double meanings. 6 times it uses the term to know, and 8 times the term to lie down. Now while an innocent meaning is possible and indeed plausible, yet we can hardly escape the double entendres that are there. When he has gone to sleep, uncover his feet and then lie down. There's a hint in the language here that this has been a very suggestive action on Ruth's part, advised by Naomi, and taking this along with the advice on how Ruth should prepare herself, she was putting herself at risk at this midnight hour. Not prepared to wait on God's timing or to do things God's way, Naomi intervenes. Is Naomi, who has been so marvelously restored by God's grace, really telling her daughter-in-law to perfume herself, to get out her nicest clothes, to go down to the threshing floor in the middle of the night, to wait until the man has had a few glasses of wine, and then to lie at the feet of this man Boaz? Is this divinely blessed, or what is going on here? Now, the threshing floor at harvest time had a bad reputation. It's a place where the prostitutes would go when the men were out away from home working hard in the harvest. No place for a respectful young woman. The informed listeners will have information about Boaz and Ruth. That information you may or may not have at your fingertips, but those who are listening to the story know a bit about their background. Boaz, you see, he was the product of an incestuous bed scene that was orchestrated by a woman when Tamar cleverly devised a scheme to become pregnant by her own father-in-law, Judah. Ruth was the product of a bed scene orchestrated by a woman plotting to get her father Lot drunk, and then his daughter sleeping with him, and the child born of that event was Moab. So their background is not great. And then there is this risky scene at the midnight threshing floor. What are we meant to think? What we're meant to think is this, that the grace of God is written all over this book. We will not elevate Naomi, Boaz, or Ruth to a position of hero or heroine, but we can actually see in the mess that is their lives that God is blessing, that God is working. Ruth Boaz find themselves now with their reputation at stake. Here we have a night scene orchestrated by a woman, and the language of the chapter is deliberately ambiguous, and sadly most of the English translations actually tone down exactly what God is saying. Naomi here has caught a hint of what God was doing in Providence in bringing Ruth into contact with Boaz. Boaz is one of the relatives who is in a position to buy back the land. Now Naomi puts her hand in to try to move things along. In a natural sense, I can understand this. Boaz is not a young man anymore. I think we get a hint of this in the chapter, that he's a good bit older than Ruth. I can see him as a big, gentle country fellow who maybe Naomi feels needs a bit of a push. So Naomi pushes, sets up the events for this chapter. Naomi's advice has placed Boaz and Ruth in a very compromising position. I think Naomi was very rash in the way that she behaved. This behavior is the hangover that characterized the family at the beginning of chapter 1 when they walked away. If God does not do things fast enough for us, if he doesn't do things in our ways, then we'll take matters into our own hands. We'll take the initiative and we will devise ways of bringing about what God has promised to give us without waiting for God's purposes to come to fruition in their lives. Naomi plans, her planned events are to take place here at the dead of night. The story goes from day to night and then back to day. And the night is the low point of the narrative. The night is the place of spiritual need and spiritual danger. In Naomi's plan, this can only be done in the darkness. It can only be done secretly and mysteriously. It is only when Boaz has spoken from the deep darkness of the night at that Bethlehem threshing floor that the light begins to dawn and the next day arrives. This counsel of Naomi is dangerous counsel. No matter how much the end in view was a righteous end, the means are risky and indeed reckless. It is good, though, that Naomi has a sense of God's purpose in his providence. She has a sense of what that might be. But it is entirely wrong for her to take it upon herself to try to bring this thing about. She recognized in some sense that the meeting of Boaz and Ruth in the field might be God's leading. But she did not submit herself to the principles that God's purposes are to be fulfilled in God's way and in God's time. Let's think about what Naomi was advising and why. First of all, the advice about the preparations. Bathing, perfume, best clothes. If you're going to get your man, Ruth, make sure you've got the right gear on. The language of the passage, as I said, is ambiguous. It's suggestive. Some commentators have worked very hard to attempt to try to rescue this passage by suggesting that her dress preparation signified the end of a period of mourning, or that she was preparing her best clothes as a bride would prepare for her husband. I think it misses the language, it misses the point, it misses the innuendo and the ambiguous phrases. We're not given the details of her dress, but we do pick up a hint that she was dressing with a view to make herself as appealing as possible to Boaz. Now, we need to be balanced in our approach to this. There is a difference in dressing to be attractive and dressing to be seductive. The Christian has no mandate to neglect their physical appearance. But there are principles that control and guide how we should conduct ourselves. When does dressing and preparing yourself attractively become overtly seductive? Now, opinion on that varies considerably, and it does need our consideration. Styles change, and older generations need to be careful not to impose older ideas of taste and style on the younger generation. But all generations need to be aware that there are principles that you need to take into consideration. Be attractive, yes, and take care of your appearance, and be careful that that is not geared to be seductive. The second instruction was the midnight rendezvous. Go there and hide, watch where he lies down, and wait until he has eaten and has had his wine. He'll be feeling pretty content after the nice meal. He'll be relaxed after a few glasses of wine. And then when he is asleep, go and uncover his feet. This uncovering of feet is very ambiguous in its meaning. And I think it was foolish for Ruth to be at the threshing floor at that time of night. And from this, we need to learn to protect ourselves from difficult situations. You see, sex outside of marriage is always wrong. Irrespective of the view that is popular in our society today, God has made us and has given us sex to be enjoyed within the married relationship. But as we come into adulthood, that desire to have a sexual relationship in many people becomes a very strong desire. To have that desire is perfectly natural and perfectly right. It is a gift from God. But a gift that is only to be enjoyed within the marriage relationship. In order to help yourself, don't get caught in this kind of situation that Naomi has engineered and Ruth has agreed to. Now, we cannot be sure of the events of chapter 3. We need to guard our lives and keep ourselves away from compromising situations. Because a few minutes of unguarded foolishness can reap a lifetime of difficulty for ourselves. But despite this foolishness and indiscretion, God overrules to bless. We need to learn from this to trust in God and to wait on His time. To not rush ahead of God, but to wait to see what He is doing and to trust Him that His ways are perfect. And to learn to behave ourselves wisely in the way that we dress, in the places where, that we go, and make every effort to keep ourselves away from situations where we know we could easily find ourselves being led into sin. The difficulty that we struggle with is the weakness of our own humanity, our particular personality, our particular temperament. How difficult it is to keep ourselves always right and pure. Knowing what I've thought, knowing what I've said, knowing what I've done, could God ever use us? Would God want to use us? Look at the material that He's working with in these chapters. He's working with Naomi to bless her. He is going to bless her abundantly. She has gone out full. He's brought her back empty. At the end of chapter 1, she had enough food for 2 weeks. At the end of chapter 2, God is blessing. There is still more food coming back. At the end of chapter 3, Ruth goes back overladen with enough food. With the message, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Because God is filling. And look at the blessing that lies ahead in chapter 4. When the marriage takes place where the baby is born. And the people of the town celebrate that Naomi has a child. How God in grace and mercy blesses us when we know that we don't deserve it. We do not deserve to be Christians. We do not deserve to have our sins forgiven. We do not deserve to be adopted into the family of God. But yet God has come and blessed us abundantly in Jesus Christ. Really, when we think about our spirituality, we know at times that we're fumbling and that we're inconsistent. At times we wonder if God would ever use us. And what we see in this story is that God is still willing to teach us. God is still willing to bless. You know, how would you have reacted when you were trying to bring Boaz and Ruth together and then you saw Naomi giving this foolish advice and say, look, if that's the kind of people they are, I'm done with them. God's not done with them. And God is not done with us. We ought to seek His strength to overcome our failings and to submit our every day to Him and never run on without Him. No matter how competent you may feel that you've read the mood, the situation, always look to God for guidance, for strength. And when there is no clear answer, be prepared to wait. To wait on God's time. Not to rush ahead. But to do things in God's timing and to do things in God's way. We see Naomi still a work in progress. Still a work that needs to be done in her heart to change her. But God is changing her and God is staying with her. And God is working in her life. And as God stays with her, so He will stay with you. So He will continue to work in your life. Continue to bless you. Beyond what you could even consider. I trust that God will encourage our hearts and cause us to look to Him.